Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Yeah, welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. Another Sunday night special. We always tape these on a Friday afternoon, so that way these guys can get some rest. D'Anthony Holloway is not here today because he is actually doing Andy Frisella's show. You guys have asked for that for years and years and years. Andy finally called and got out of whatever cave he was in and invited D'Anthony Holloway up to St. Louis to record Real AF. So that episode will be out next week. Instead, it's just me left to my own devices. And I've invited a friend today. Yes. Michael Yo joins us. Hello. How are you?
Hello. Let's talk about it as soon as I sit down. An armrest. Does he really need an armrest? How much of a lazy fuck is he that needs an armrest?
It's really crazy. We host a podcast.
Yeah.
He does not need an armrest.
What do you need it for? What? There's a desk.
I don't know.
Just put it on the desk.
I don't know.
This chair.
Yeah.
Does he know these lift up too? Look at that.
Yeah, those
look
go up. Those go up as well. A lot of deep sighs out of him too into the microphone where he's just over everything that's going on in the world. He's got the armrest. I mean, he's basically a wheelchair away from being Governor Abbott. Welcome to Texas.
I'm from Texas. I know Texas very well.
No shit.
Born and raised in Houston, Texas.
No way.
Oh,
let's
yeah.
go. You ever been to Bucks Wild down there?
No, I never been to Bucks Wild.
The strip club?
No.
I did a live episode in there.
The strip club I used to go to when I was younger, much younger, in high school and things like that, was it was called, not high school. What am I talking about?
Did you go in high school? We went in high school.
I'm talking 18 years old.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Whatever that. It was called Treasures.
Treasures.
And the men's club.
Oh, nice.
Those were the two. It was, I believe they were on Richmond. Back in Richmond Avenue?
Yeah.
Is that still a thing? I don't even know.
It's tough to say. Every time I go there, it seems to be different. There's endless construction on the roads. And then if you take the wrong turn, you're at a Caballero type establishment where people are slapping flautas in the corner and you're like, oh shit, am I supposed to be here?
It's interesting, Houston, even today, just coming here, there's construction everywhere. You would think living in Texas, like they would get it down by now. The construction would be done.
Not a prayer.
Roads always under construction.
Always.
Always. And the Texans or Oilers will never win a Super Bowl. So those are the two things that are pretty consistent in Texas.
You can add the Cowboys to that list. I think we're good after the 90s.
What is the deal with the Cowboys? Why do people say they're America's team unless America is a bunch of losers?
It is.
Seriously.
I think it is. I think America has become a bunch of losers.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it, where it's just like, all right, great. Who's the biggest losing franchise right now?
It's the Cowboys.
Yes.
But they're the most popular franchise and they're the biggest losers. I never understood it.
Me neither.
People wear Dallas Cowboys jerseys everywhere. They're huge. And I'm like, they don't win.
They don't win. The jerseys are XXX, and then it's jean shorts, a pack of cools.
There you go.
And then usually a visor that goes to the side just to let you know that I'm a Cowboys fan.
What? Haven't they only won like two playoff games in the last 20 years or something like that?
Yeah,
maybe three?
Yeah.
It's like, why are you embracing it? And then every year is like, oh, this is the year. I love Stephen A.
Mm-hmm.
And when he craps on the Cowboys, oh, it's beautiful.
It's the best.
It's the best.
I think that's why they brought him in there. It's just simply to dunk on the Cowboys day after day, and that's kind of it.
And just when you think the Cowboys are going to be good, nah. They're horrible.
They're terrible.
It's all. And they're going to be, I think they're going to be even worse this year.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
They didn't spend any money in free agency, so we'll find out. What are you doing in town here? Stand up?
I'm doing stand up. I'm at the Vulcan tonight, which is Friday, tonight and tomorrow. So I'll be out there. Last night I popped in the Red Band show, the secret show. So that was fun, you know. So, I got to say, this is the only place, and when I say nervous, I just don't know what to expect. Like when I do Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, always sold out, it does great. Austin's such a different animal because I lived here for 7 years too. I used to be on a station called 96.7 Kiss FM.
Yeah.
It's Kiss FM now, but it was called KHFI.
Okay.
Back in the day. I'm talking about early 2000s.
Sure. Kiss was syndicated pretty much everywhere. There was a Kiss in every state.
That's when they threw Kisses on everywhere.
Right.
You know, I was here where Austin Music Festival or what. I remember the first year I went.
Austin City Limits?
City Limits. It was like 300 people. And that was it. That was done. It was in a small room. It was like 300 people, small auditorium. And I'm sure that's huge. And then especially South by Southwest. This place is crazy right now. And every comedian I know is moving down here.
Rogan's here. I actually saw you on Rogan a few months back.
I've been on 3 times on Rogan. And let me tell you, what's great about Rogan is he's a giver, man. Like, he changes people's lives. He really does. If you're on
the
show,
white Oprah.
He is. You know, he can actually change your life if you're on that show, and he's done it for so many people. You go from selling a certain amount of tickets to right after his show, you're selling a lot of tickets. Mm-hmm. The only other show I've been on, like Rogan's, that has that effect is Chelsea lately.
Yep.
Back in the day, if you were on that show, literally, you could go from not selling a ticket to selling out everywhere you went if you were a regular on that show.
Yeah.
You know, and if you were like Joe Coy was already great at stand up, when he went on that show, it just went to another level.
And so, I feel like she took Whitney Cummings to another level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I always say Chelsea lately, or Chelsea Handler, that show, it was like the American Idol of comedy. If you were on that show and did well, you would sell out. Yeah. I didn't even do stand up till I was on that show.
No shit.
Like, they introduced me, Joe Coy took me as a mentor, and you know, he's my mentor, and he took me out on the road, and that's how I started stand up.
That's amazing, man, because I know you pretty much as the Black Seacrest. We had the white Oprah, and then the Black Seacrest. You've hosted every single show my life. I've done interviews with you for some of the movies I've been in over the years.
Mm-hmm.
We always had to stop on the red carpet and chat with you.
That's right.
You were everywhere, and I was like, my God, that guy's going to be exhausted.
I am. Well, here's what's interesting. It was almost like, you know, not as important, but I was like a doctor. I had my phone was always on. Literally, if I still worked in that genre, they could call me right now and say, we need you in Europe tomorrow because you're interviewing such and such. Mm-hmm. Now, to a lot of people, that's a great lifestyle. But once you have kids, and it's a terrible lifestyle.
Right.
You know, because I don't want to have to jump on a jet and fly to a place to interview whatever celebrity and hear about their dreams, where my dream is not interviewing you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I loved it, but I have dreams too. Mm-hmm. And when you're constantly hearing about other people's dreams, it kind of makes you like kind of depressed. It's like, my job is to interview you about your dreams, and I'm sitting here going, this is not my dream. I loved it.
Yeah.
I love doing it. And that's why I love podcasting, you know, but like this right here, you're building this yourself. This is your shit. You own it. You know what I mean? That's what you want to be in a position of. You don't want to be just disposable to a company. And when you do what I do, you know, anybody can interview anybody.
Sure.
You know, podcasting has proved that. You know, some people do it well, some people don't, but anybody can interview anybody. And when I was doing on that high level on TV, it kind of, you know, other people can basically pull the plug from under you. That's when I got out and said, I need to act and I need to do stand up. And I'm going to take a financial hit at the beginning, but I know it'll come back around. And it has, double time. So,
and with E in particular, because like everybody, you know, knew you from there. I mean, shit, everybody would tune in before pre-show, all of it.
E was big, man. When I was there, E was huge. You know, that's when, because I was at the time where E launched so many shows. Mm-hmm. It launched Chelsea Lately. It launched The Suit with Joel McHale. It was a reboot of that.
The Kardashians.
The Kardashians just blew up. So like, Our show, even the news shows, were doing exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a thing where if you were in college when I was on TV, you would go straight to your dorm room and watch E. We were that hot thing right now. Snoop Dogg did a show with us. I mean, every cool person in Hollywood wanted to be on E. And that was an amazing moment to be there when it was E.
Right, right.
Now it's still E, but it's not the same. You know what I mean? There's like, I remember people used to run home because like I used to go to schools, like high schools and colleges, and they would run home to go watch E because it was a thing back then.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Now it's everything. You can get news at any time now. So it's kind of diluted entertainment reporting. And I saw that coming too. So I was like, look, I love doing it, but I also want to start my own career.
Sure.
Know?
Yeah.
And own my own product.
Every woman, you know, around Oscars, Grammys, all that stuff, like it started with you guys.
Yep.
And then you went into the actual show.
Yep.
You never watched the live telecast. You started on E because you knew we were gonna get some shit, right?
Absolutely, because every celebrity would want to stop by E.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's kind of like E was that hip thing, and then when they started the show, it became, oh, here's the old show. You know what I mean? Even when you go at that time, E was very different, because when you go to the red carpet of E, and then like to ABC, NBC, CBS. It was just an older tone with them, where E was Ryan Seacrest. He was the big American Idol. He was like the biggest ish at that time, you know?
Yeah.
So he and they
you
paid
can say shit on this show, by the way.
I know.
You can say whatever you want
on
this show.
But my wife is like really on me about cursing. You know, I try. And here's what's weird. I don't really curse in real life, just on podcasts.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the real me comes out on podcasts.
You said fuck at the top of the show.
I know.
And 15 seconds in.
And I felt bad about
it. You shouldn't.
But I shouldn't have said that, you know? Because you know what I heard about YouTube? It messes if you curse in the first
30 seconds. Yeah.
In the first 3 minutes.
Oh, it's funny. We have a call today. I'll confirm that today.
Dude, I'm telling you, if you drop a curse word and don't kind of fade it out in the first 3 minutes, your algorithm gets hurt big time.
All right. Hey, fade it, Delco.
Fade out the curse word. My wife would be happy, too.
Yeah, she would. Maybe we'll put a picture of Ann H. there right when he says it.
Oh, come on.
R.I.P., she's gone.
R.I.P. Look,
you probably interviewed her over the years.
I have.
What was she like in real life?
She was very nice. I mean, here's the thing that's interesting to me. I've heard stories about different celebrities doing different things to other reporters. I saw a reporter cry after he interviewed, who was it? He asked a question he wasn't supposed to ask, and the publicist asked not to answer, and everybody walked out. I know it was for a movie. Joseph Gordon-Levitt was a part of that movie, and they all walked out. And I had to interview the guys afterwards, so they all came in for my interview, and it went great. So I don't know if it's because I'm smiley. I'm not a dick usually. And also I'm big, so I really never got the BS a lot of other reporters got. Like my other friend said, Tommy Lee Jones was horrible to him and like really makes reporters feel bad. Wasn't like that with me. So yeah. Jennifer Lopez at a time, she was like horrible to report. Wasn't like that to me. Jennifer Aniston was supposed to be the same. The nicest person you will ever meet.
It's because you're black. You know that, right?
No, it's because I'm black and Asian. You know?
You're Blasian.
They're Blasian. They're supporting two minorities. They were like, we can't act terrible with him. But no, that's the thing is like, Ann was great, but everybody's great. I never had a problem with anyone, you know? So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've interviewed everybody, so I can't specifically remember what movie it was, but I know she was lovely.
I want to interview the guy who called the police after she broke into the house, took a shower, and then was on the couch, got in his bathrobe, and asked to watch some Netflix, and homeboy called the police. Like to
Wait,
me,
while he was in the house?
Yeah. So he walked in. And she was in the shower.
Oh, you know about this, right? It's a big thing right now called frogging. You know about frogging?
What's frogging?
P-H-R-O-G-G-I-N-G. It's called frogging. People live in your house when you don't know. And when you leave, it turns into their house. And then when you come back, they hide in your closet and sleep overnight in your closet, in your basement, in your attic. This is a real thing. It's a trend. So after
where? Here?
Everywhere. Everywhere. If you Google frogging, there's stories all over. It's on TV. It's everywhere. Frogging is a thing now.
Oh, God.
So just think
it.
About this. You leave your house.
Yeah.
They're staying in your basement, attic, or in your closet. Sometimes they put up a false wall that they just, it's true. This is all true. And then when you leave, they take pictures by your refrigerator, eating your food. They go on your laptop. They watch your Netflix and everything.
And that's how they get off.
And that's their thing. And they said it's not a crime.
Hang on, Delka, you gotta...
Yeah, why is it called frogging, not Scooby-Dooing?
Because they jump from different houses.
Ah, got it. Why is there a PH?
I don't know, because it's fat. I don't know. I don't know why they put a PH in it. But it's a real thing, man.
I would have gone down with Ann Hitch that day. Like, I wouldn't have called the cops. I would have been like, oh shit, Ann Hitch is in my house.
In your house? Oh, yeah.
He called the police. I would have been like, let's go. Unmarried. I'm married, too. I've got kids. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Unmarried.
Was she hot?
Yes. This was, I think, maybe 10 or 15 years ago. Look up the date, Bob.
I knocked over the armrest.
That's fine. That's fine. Throw in the garbage.
So let's paint this picture.
Yeah.
You're at your house.
Yep.
A lady that's attractive is already in your house.
Correct.
She's in your robe watching your Netflix.
And just got out of the shower. Hair's wet. Probably combed a little bit. Probably used your toothbrush, toothpaste.
See, I don't know, man. That would freak me out.
Really?
Yeah.
Even when I
was younger and I lived in Austin. It's just something about crazy women. It's just about crazy guys or women. You know, it's just, you don't want that in your house.
But one night, you're in an apartment. Do you really care about the apartment? You know, if it was your house, fine. But it's an apartment.
But you care about
in LA.
Her killing you.
But that's part of the excitement of it, where you let
no,
that go.
No,
yes.
I don't need that excitement in my life.
You hand her a dull butter knife and say, all right, look, no. Whatever happens, happens.
Are you crazy? Are you fucking crazy? No way.
Yes.
If you're crazy and you're, I got out of that crazy phase when I was young. There was a date. I was on a date and a girl looked at me. And this first date, she goes, if we were to have kids, this is real story. If we were to have kids and that kid committed a murder, this first date,
yep.
Would you cover it up?
Yes.
Or turn him in?
I'd cover it up.
See, you're fucking crazy too. I can't deal with people like you.
No way.
I know.
You have kids, right?
I do now.
How many kids do you have?
I would, two.
You have a son?
Yes, he's okay. Five.
So he's 5 years old.
I would turn him in. Turn him in a heartbeat.
No way.
Hell yeah. I wouldn't cover nothing up.
I would. What if he was? What if it
because
was a
it was,
justified murder?
Turn him in, then he'd be innocent.
No.
If it's justified, he'd be innocent.
There's some things like, who is it? Cain Velasquez, Giorgio?
Yeah.
The UFC fighter. So, yeah.
I heard about this.
Yeah. Went after the pedophile who was molesting his child.
No, but he went after
the pedophile. Tried to murder him. Right.
So, but that's different
but
than...
But let's say your kid was in that situation. He ended up stabbing the guy or whatever. I mean, he's still going to spend some time in the pokey and all that shit. Like,
say your kid converts to Islam and Salman Rushdie walks right by him.
We're real topical today.
Wow.
First of all,
I'm not talking about Muslims because I don't want them to bomb me. So, this was so interesting to me, just off topic. When reporters talk about Russia, like, and go in on, I'm like, do you know they kill people, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they put shit in your drink. It's like, I would never talk about Russia or any other, but I'm scaredy. I'm a scaredy cat, too. You know, I tell everybody, I'm not a man's man. I will not, you know, I don't talk shit about, like, I'm scared.
I get it, dude. You wouldn't fuck Anne Heche.
No.
Well, 15-year-old.
Where'd that come from? Anne Heche was in my house. Is that what you
yes,
said?
Yes, you wouldn't.
No.
So already, you wouldn't fuck Anne Heche.
No,
you wouldn't cover
all,
up a murder for your son.
First of all, I wouldn't address a dead woman, first of all. So I'm not, that never came out my mouth, people. Let's talk about that. Rest in peace, Anne.
RIP, but look up the year, Bob. I need to see what Anne Heche that is.
It was in August. It was August 19th, 2000, so we're actually coming up on the 22-year anniversary.
Oh, shit!
Of what?
Of the break-in.
Yeah,
and that's when the dude found her in the house.
So she was on ecstasy at the time.
Oh, my God, even better.
See, I missed all this. I didn't know this was an Anne Heche story. She really did this.
She really did this.
Oh, yeah, no.
Oh, I thought you were just talking about some random person.
No. We're talking about Anne Heche.
She did a Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, but just showed up in somebody's house and
so 19 years ago, because I saw the picture of her recently, right before she passed, obviously. She got in that car, and she looked pretty good for her age. Imagine 19 years ago, you show up and that's waiting for you at home. You go all in.
But she was on ecstasy too.
Even better.
Nah,
come on.
I don't know. You know what's sad about all this? People think like money and fame makes you have a better life, but it doesn't, man.
Well,
like a lot of times, if you know how to handle it, does.
Yeah.
But man, like, how many times you hear somebody hit the lottery and then they have the worst life ever because they just get crazy?
Here's the thing that I always tell people regarding fame.
Yes.
Fame will show you who you really are. So if you're a fucking terrible person before you got famous.
You're a bigger terrible person.
Correct. If you have a good base of family and friends, fame is awesome. Money is fucking awesome. All of those things can be amazing, but it depends on how you grew up, who your friends and family are now, and then whether or not you're able to handle it out in public.
Can I tell you who told me the exact same word? Donald Faison. He's on
Scrub. Oh, I love him.
Yep. So I was at his house, and he's the nicest. Like, such a cool dude. I go, why haven't you changed? And he goes, said exactly what you said. So if I was an asshole, I'd be a bigger asshole. But I never was. So I'm a nice guy. Now it looks like I'm even nicer because I'm successful, even though I'm the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's those levels. But then you meet those... this is so weird. I've just never had an encounter except Anne Hathaway that was bad, you know?
What was your encounter with Anne Hathaway?
It was my fault, though, you know? I was interviewing Anne Hathaway for Rio 2. It was a movie. She was an animated movie. And my boss made me ask the dumbest question in the world. Anne Hathaway graced the cover of, I believe, it's the one with... the lady, I believe Vogue, but I could be wrong.
Sure. Anna Wintour.
Yes. Yeah. So it was Vogue. Anne Hathaway was on the cover of Vogue. A couple months later, big story, Kanye and Kim got the cover and people were like, oh my God, they're destroying the magazine. What's her name? Sold out.
Yeah. Anna
Wintour sold out. So they wanted me to ask Anne Hathaway what she thought about Kim and Kanye on the cover. And who, like, when I got the question, I'm like, she's going to say she doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know what it was? So I try to think what they could say, because all you want is a gotcha moment with that. Mm-hmm. Her to be like, oh, I don't, you know, I don't really like it. And then, dude, the clips everywhere. Anne Hathaway shit talks. Yeah. Kim and Kanye.
Hates black people.
Yes, especially Kanye, you know, but loves his albums, you know, shit like that. So I asked, it was the last question. And we had to climb up to interview this cast, and then we have to climb down this staircase. So I asked the question, and she goes, oh, you know, it's Anna Wintour's magazine. She can do what she wants. So I'm like, cool. I could tell she was irritated, though. I'm walking down the stairs, and I hear Anne Hathaway go, because she thinks I'm gone. She goes, what a fucking dumb question. Why do I give a fuck if Kim and Kanye are on the cover? This is the kind of bullshit they bring me. And I was about to turn back around because I could hear all this, yeah, right? She was spitting anger. And I was about to, and then it hit me. She's right. Because I even thought that before I asked the question. So,
but did you go back and tell her, hey, no, dude, that was dumb and I apologize? Like,
no, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't. Because I never saw her again. And probably on purpose, because she probably told her team never to let me interview her again. So that question probably ruined a relationship with her, which I don't really care about at the time. At that time. And then it's kind of like with the entertainment reporting, what it does, it makes you ask questions you don't want to ask, but you get all the you get all the blame for it when that's your job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get hired to act, they want you to act in a movie. You know,
right?
My job was to interview you and ask the questions that we needed, and it makes me look like an asshole. So Anne Hathaway's team would be like, I don't want to interview with that show, or give me a different person.
Right.
And it really, the consequence is on you. Like, you suffer. So that's why I got to a point where I don't want to ask questions I don't want to ask. And that's why I started my own podcast. That's why I started interviewing friends that are comics and different types of people, authors, because that's what I'm interested in. And I ask whatever I want. And I don't have to be like, I don't know if I'm going to ask it or not. You know?
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, where you also star in a bunch of stuff, and you act as well. And
you don't want to ruin a relationship.
Right, right.
What if I'm in a movie, or I have this sitcom deal, and they want Anne Hathaway on the show? You know, it could come back to bite you in the ass.
I went through that years ago. I was friends with Whitney Cummings way back in the day. And she'd asked me to do this thing on VH1. And it was like talking heads, just comedians kind of making fun of celebrities and pop culture and anything. She's like, hey, you want to come do this gig? Whatever, you'd be great for. And I was like, no. I was like, I'm starring in movies now. I don't want to make fun of the people that I could be working with. And it turns out, I ended up doing a movie about somebody they were making fun of one day, and I was like, holy shit. Thank God I wasn't on that.
And also, like you have numbers of very successful people. I've been a type of person where I didn't really go out and party with these very successful people, even though I got offered the chance, because the first time I call them,
mm-hmm,
or when I do call them, I wanted them to know it's serious and it's business, rather than, oh, this is the guy I got wasted with.
Right.
You know, and he threw up all over the table and stuff like that. How am I going to do business with this guy? So it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind, but I stay friendly until, like, you know, I have a great business proposition for him. But that's how I've always played it, you know.
In your opinion, because we have it on the show and I've said it many times, I just want to hear yours.
Yeah.
Who do you think the greatest entertainer is in Hollywood?
Entertainer? Jamie Foxx.
Yes.
100%.
There we go.
100%.
We've said it on this show a million times.
100%. Because I've interviewed everybody. Yeah. Jamie Foxx can do stand-up. He can rap. He can sing. He can, and not just act. He's a phenomenal.
Impressions.
Everything.
Oscars. The guy is a messiah, that guy. It's
he
crazy.
Is. Yeah. He's a special talent. And there's not, I can't think of maybe, I mean, he's the guy. He's the guy that...
I don't think there's really anybody close anymore. I would have said Jim Carrey back in the day.
Yeah.
But he kind of lost his mind with all this
there
wild shit.
There are people better than him at certain... there are better actors than him. You know, he's a phenomenal actor, but he's not the best actor.
Right.
You know what I mean? There are better singers than him, but because he's not the best singer. But if the whole package, nobody can beat him.
Yeah.
But if you break him down... There's people that could do things, I mean, and it's all subjective anyway.
Sure.
There are certain people that can do things better than him, but not all of them at once.
Yeah, because it's one of those things where, to me, I think there's a difference between the biggest movie star and then the biggest actor or the greatest actor.
Yes, 100%.
Because Tom Cruise, I think, is the greatest movie star of all time, but he's not the best actor of all time. Nobody's going to say he's the best actor ever.
No, he will not go down.
It'll probably be Daniel Day-Lewis, right?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Could be.
I like, you know what's interesting is interviewing like Al Pacino, Leonardo DiCaprio, Denzel Washington. Like, you're sitting down and you interview a lot of people that will be legends.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting interviewing a legend because in your mind, you're like, when they're gone, when their time is done, they're a legend. And I just sat down and had an hour with them.
Right.
You know what I mean? And if you strip away what you're in right now, it's like a pretty amazing feeling that when it's all said and done, you just sat down with a legend.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and it's not lost on me when I interview somebody like that. And that's why I try to make it so great for them as well, because, you know, when Al Pacino passes, you know, I interviewed him and I'll be like, and everybody's gonna say he's a legend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just that kind of is hard for me to comprehend at times, you know, that you're sitting down with legends in what we do.
For me personally, I look at it as a chance to pick the brain of somebody that brilliant, whoever mm-hmm. it is. And then if I can leave with one piece of advice or some nugget of information that I can take that changes my life, that's what I view podcasting as in getting to interview legends like that, where it's just, all right, great. How do I, like Tim Kennedy is one of our favorites on this show. There is no better person who is just an all around great human. And if the world is ending, that's the guy you're hoping. That, I was like, where's his house? I'm going to drive to his house. I know Tim will take care of this, whatever this is. But there's people like that that do change your life. But there's also, like, I understand the other side of it for you at E, there's a ton that just don't. And you're like, holy shit, man. I don't want to talk to this fucking person.
Yeah. And then, you know, I remember telling my wife for the first time I was going to leave entertainment. And we just had our son. And I was like, yeah, we're going to take a big hit. But I think it's going to come back on the other end. And now to see my special come out on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I put my special out on YouTube, my latest special, 4 months ago, and I only had 3,000 followers on YouTube. It was a dumping ground. Literally, if I posted on Instagram or Facebook, it would just dump it on YouTube. Never even cared about it. I put my special on there. And in 4 months, my YouTube went from 3,000 to I'm close to 150,000 people in 4 months.
That's amazing.
And for the growth for me, it was so big where YouTube called me and go, yo, what are you doing? Let's give you more examples of what you can do. Sure. My clips have 10 to 15 million views. So everything took off from there. And then I've never been stopped so much. And this is the power of YouTube. As much as I get stopped all the time. Oh, I saw you on YouTube. And 4 months ago, that wasn't even a thing in my life. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, look at all this time I miss by not having a great product to put on YouTube. But everything happens for a reason too. I'm not going to sit back and whine about me. Let me really kick up my podcast. Let me build a studio at my house. Let me get these guests on. And this is only like my second month of really putting it out there. But, you know, it's a thing where it feels good to be in a position where, oh, you can be your own boss,
mm-hmm.
make a little money from YouTube and Instagram right now, but you could see the potential of it growing and growing and growing and growing. And at the end of it, like here, I'll be sitting in a room with five different sets, you know, and going, yo, and bringing all my friends into it. And that's where I want to be. Bring my friends into it and just explode and help everybody out.
Yeah, you just described what's going on here.
Yeah, man.
We got 7 shows that, you know, that go on in here. Pump out about 125 shows a month out of here, and we love it. But my biggest regret is not using YouTube. I did a sketch in 2006, right when it opened, and I was just like, I'm doing movies. This is bullshit. And they looked at YouTube people like you were trash.
They did.
It was a bad stigma around YouTube, and it was like even agents and managers were like, don't be putting shit on YouTube. That's fucked up.
But
I remember the power of it. The first sketch that I did. It was in 06. There was a homepage on YouTube, and they used to put like the top 10 sketches on there. It lived for like a week. So the sketch got like 800,000 views.
Yeah.
And I took a date to a movie at Cinerama Dome down there. It was a Friday night opening movie. I forget what it was. And the couple sat down next to us, and it was, oh, shit, dude. You're the guy from YouTube. And I was like, and at that point, I'd had a bunch of movies out, but he only knew about this sketch from YouTube. And I was like, that was in 06. And I wasted it,
man.
And now we're trying to play catch up.
Well, that's what I've done the last 4 months. Where I saw the power of YouTube. And like I talked to Sam about putting my comedy special up there, and it did great for him. Mark Norman, it did great
every
for him.
Comedian that's come through in the last 2 months. Brett Ernst,
yeah, that's my dude, man. He put his on YouTube.
He was here.
And the thing is you're getting it. What I love
Giannis,
about this,
Giannis Pappas. Giannis was here. Giannis, same thing with Giannis, dude. His special exploded.
And what I love, Akash. Yeah, what I love is for me, when I shot mine, I funded everything because Joe Coy was like, "Yo, man, you got to shoot this and own it." I didn't even try to pitch it to Netflix or anything because I wanted it to come out 2 years after I almost died from COVID, right on the day. So I put it out, funded it, didn't really think about it. And I just wanted 120,000 views in a year. 10,000 a month, great. New people will see my stand-up clips here and there. Then I get a call from my agent. It's like, yo, you need new material because you know everybody that's coming out, you know, they're going to know this special. Mm-hmm. And I'm only at 400,000 views right now, you know. So I'm like, just think if it hits 1 million, 2 million,
yeah.
You have to turn over the material.
That's done.
It's done. It's done.
It's done to the world.
But I've never been to the point because my first special, nobody gave a shit about. It's on Amazon. You know, I maybe two people have stopped me since the first special came out because I know nobody watches Amazon for comedy specials.
Really. Nobody watches Amazon for comedy specials, one. Two, if you got buried in an algorithm, let's say on Netflix or something like that, you might get, you know, 80,000 views, 90,000 views, and then you're buried in an algorithm and it doesn't see the light of day after that. You keep searching, searching, searching.
I will say though, if you got a comedy special on Netflix and you didn't blow up, you can blame algorithms or whatever you want, but you had the best opportunity to make it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're on the biggest platform in the world for stand-up comedy. At least you're on that platform. Now, I'm the type of person that doesn't expect whatever platform you're on to do the work for you. You know what I mean?
Right.
You got to put a lot of work into. You got to try to get a publicist, or you got to try to book a bunch of radio podcast interviews and things like that to draw people to it. But at least you're on the biggest platform, so you're given the biggest opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, Netflix is going to push out more than others and things like that for bigger comics. But you're still on the biggest platform, and your job is to try to get people to that platform. Where YouTube, you can say I'm on a huge platform, but they're not, you know, I'm just there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not like there's any commercials for it. You know, at the time when I put it out, even just 4 months ago, Netflix was still like, everybody was Netflix. It just started, YouTube just started to pop in comedy because people wanted to own their own stuff. But still, if you're on Netflix, that's the biggest platform. People have watched my kind of stand-up special on YouTube and said, hey man, I saw your Netflix special.
You
know,
okay.
And they tell me jokes from it, so I know they saw it.
Gotcha.
You know, but Netflix is so embedded in people's brains for stand-up because of Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, and all these big comedians. You know, people think whenever they see stand-up, they automatically defer mentally to Netflix, which is...
I don't, because those are the only comics I see. So, like, your special has never popped up in my algorithm.
Yeah.
And when I go down Netflix, you're probably looking at about seven or eight columns. I understand that.
Yeah.
But friends of mine who have been on there, like, oh, hey. And I'm like, man, I'm just not seeing this. I'm seeing the same guys that they're paying over and over again.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing Chappelle in my face all day long.
Yes.
Chris Rock. I'm seeing those guys in that feed. And then the rest of them, it's just like, wait. Okay, so go to search and then go down and then type in your name and... And then it kind of gets lost for some of them.
It does. It does.
And I know Brett had said that when he was on the show, too. But yeah.
But you are on the biggest platform.
You are. Correct.
You are. And that's my whole point is if you're on the biggest platform, it gives you a way better opportunity to get seen.
But who says YouTube's not the biggest platform?
That's what I'm saying. And what I find interesting about YouTube, it's there, it's living, it's a search engine.
Mm-hmm.
So if I interview you, Mike, and then I post it, my comedy special may pop up in somebody's feed after they watch our interview.
Correct.
Because I interview Joe Coy, it has a lot of views on it. So now my special is sometimes if you watch a Joe Coy clip, my special will pop up, or a clip of my special will pop up. And that's what I love about YouTube. You know, so it's a thing where... Every comic at one time wanted a Netflix special.
Yep.
And to me, still, that's the biggest platform to be seen and legitimized as a comic. Because literally, anybody can shoot a special and put it on YouTube.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean?
100%.
And, but now, after owning it, after seeing all the money I'm making from it,
yeah,
off the clips, off of getting booked everywhere, I'm like, oh, this is a game I've never been in, where now people are calling me saying, hey, after a year, year and a half, if you want to distribute it, where before I wasn't even in those conversations. So it's a, so I learned a big deal about betting on yourself, which I did when I got an entertainment reporting. But really, you got to be able to take a sacrifice and put money into yourself too and go,
yeah,
it's easy to say I'm a bet on myself, but when they say, hey, you need to take out 15, 20 grand, put it in this special.
Yep.
And it's your money. And if you lose it, you lose it. If not, you know, hey,
sorry. Yeah.
And when you do that, there's no better feeling now to, and it's, like I said, it's only going to be at 400,000 views when this podcast airs, but those 400,000 means so much more than me.
And
than
it'll just keep growing. It'll keep growing.
It means so much more to me than a thumbnail on Amazon Prime.
Right.
That nobody's watching.
Nobody. Absolutely, you know, nobody.
Nobody. I would say probably my special on Amazon might have 30,000 views.
Yeah.
For 4 years.
You just don't go there. It's just not the thing. Like, it's the last, for me, it's the last app. So I'll rank them real quick.
Yes, please do.
For me, I still start with HBO. That's going to go away, obviously, with them folding into Discovery.
Yeah.
So that'll be.
So you watch a lot of stuff on the HBO
I do. App. On HBO Max, yeah.
Really?
100%. Wow. I think their programming, well, it was before this merger. We'll see what happens after that. But their programming, to me, was still the best. I look at The Wire. I look at The Sopranos. I look at Entourage. I mean, there's so many hits.
But those are
Game
old
of
shows.
Thrones.
What new show were you watching on it, though?
Right. So as far as new stuff goes, their documentaries have been lights out. My wife is heavy in true crime and all that stuff. I forget who the guy who admitted to murder on the HBO doc was.
Oh,
Bob.
Yeah,
damn
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I remember he did it in the bathroom. That
yes.
Guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was pissing.
He was pissing. It was Mike.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's his name again?
Yeah. Bob, do you know that guy's name?
The show was The Jinx. It's Robert
That's
Durst.
It. Yes, The
What's
Jinx.
His name?
Robert Durst. Durst. Yeah,
yes,
The Jinx.
Yes,
and
yeah.
He's in prison now, by the way. So he ended up going
away
for that.
I believe he's dead, actually.
Oh, did he die? R.I.P. We got a lot of dead people here today.
Dude,
Salman Rushdie dies today. That's going to be fucking crazy, too. But yeah, so with HBO, their documentaries and everything else, and then as soon as one program ends, another one will pop up. So like The Mayor of Easttown. I love that with Homegirl. She was in Titanic. Kate Winslet.
Kate Winslet.
She was great in that, and I was like, "All right, great. There's no shows on HBO. What's next? Winning Time. Winning Time pops
okay,
up.
Okay, so
I'm
you.
Like, oh
so,
shit! I'm all
I
in
wanna,
again.
I want to know your order because my order is going to be completely different.
Okay,
yours.
HBO one, Netflix two, three is now Hulu, and like I was never a fucking Hulu guy. Yes,
wow.
And I'll tell you why. All of the FX shows went to Hulu, so I'm a huge Atlanta fan. I only watch Atlanta on Hulu now because I don't catch it live on FX, and I don't have the capability to DVR or the time for it anymore. So I would rather just watch it on Hulu later. Dave is another great show that they had.
Yep.
There was a movie called Palm Springs. One of my buddies got a movie on there called The Killing of Two Lovers, which is fantastic. And then there was a show with Wu-Tang Clan. Have you seen the series about Wu-Tang Clan?
No.
It's dope as fuck.
Okay, I gotta watch that.
And they knocked it out of the park. So like RZA and all those guys produced it, and it's so fucking good. And you're like, holy shit, what else is on Hulu?
Yeah.
And it was never Hulu, right? And then fourth was Amazon. Like that was the end of the night.
Amazon doesn't. I don't think I've ever watched anything off of Amazon. Anything like not one. I can't name.
The Boys.
See, I watch. Okay,
Terminalist. But The Boys. Hey, The Boys is new, and so is Terminalist.
I watched one episode of The Boys and liked it, but then I was like, I never go back to
the
Amazon.
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
No.
Oh yes. Okay, I did watch. Yes,
I gave it a few tries.
I gave it two seasons. I loved it for. Is it? Came
yeah,
out
it's still going.
Season?
Yeah, yeah, it's still going.
Fourth is out. Third was bad. Fourth is better.
Fourth came out. See, that's how much I don't watch Amazon.
Right.
It's so weird how in today's climate, you get fed what you're looking for. Like, there's no honest opinions anymore. When I stopped watching Mrs. Maisel, don't get alerts from it. You never see it on feeds or anything like that. It's all about, like, other stuff you watch.
Well, they're listening to you.
But they're listening. They are, man. It's scary how you could be in your house and say something and then it's on your app.
You're getting frogged right now, brother.
I am. Somebody's probably at my house in my closet right now.
Wearing your clothes, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're wearing your clothes, sleeping in your bed.
Acting like they're black and Asian.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
These people.
They've got scotch tape on their eyes. Like, they're trying to, they're going all in, dude. They're going all in at your house.
I can't believe really that was a thing when I was growing up. Like, people would pull their eyes back. All you white people. Disgusting white people.
I prefer to be called round eyes.
That fucking guy, I think it was Yuli Gurriel, did it in the World Series in 2017.
Yes.
Yes.
He hit a homer off Yu Darvish and literally did that walking into the dugout to, I guess, stunt on Yu Darvish.
Yeah. Dude, it was so dumb. And man, I tell you, I saw it done to my mom and me, and it was like, dude, this is ridiculous. This is so the climate today is just everything. It's the news fault. It's everybody's fault.
It's the media's fault.
Huh?
It's the media's fault.
I don't like that. I don't like when people say media, because what is media? Nobody ever can say. When people just, that's like saying.
So I'll say this. I'll separate it for you, traditional media.
Okay, let me tell you what I hate is when you have one side that doesn't know shit, they're just saying headlines, and another side just saying their headlines, and they go, well, it's the media. It's like, what is media? That's like saying, oh, all black people do this, all white people do this, all Latino people do this. People just say media because they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. I'm getting fired up.
Oh, it's because
they're just generalizing, like, it's the media. Okay, what media? I know you know because you're educated.
Yeah.
Most people that say that are not educated, though.
Michael, you got a podcast. You know we got some sponsors we got to read, brother. First and foremost, GhostBed.com/drinking bros. It's hot as hell still. It's not getting better anytime soon. You might as well get a cooling mattress and some cooling pillows with GhostBed's patented technology. Best in the biz. Some side might say it's too chilly. Totally kidding. It's 112 degrees here. It can never be too goddamn cold in the bedroom. I don't want to sleep in sweat. Damn it. Instead, go to GhostBed.com/drinkingbros. Type in the promo code drinkingbros for 30% off everything in the entire store. Pillows, sheets, mattresses, adjustable bases, weighted blanket, the mattress cover, whatever your heart desires, fill up the cart as high as it'll go at GhostBed.com/drinkingbros. Now, if you want 40% off, got to get that bundle package, dog. It's the adjustable base and the mattress combined together for a magical, fun-filled evening of lovemaking or just watching the stars. Cut the roof of your house off. Make it a fucking convertible. Just look at the stars inside your house. You don't need a roof anymore. What I'm saying is the bed is so goddamn comfortable, you'll just want to gaze at the stars. It's amazing. You can get 50% off the 3D Matrix mattress at GhostBed.com/RingerBros. Keanu Reeves is going to deliver it to your house. He told me so. He told me, he texted me the other day. And he said, I'm gonna do it. I am an FBI agent. I'll deliver the mattress. I was like, all right, great, Keanu. I'll tell the people. So he's going to do that. And then at checkout, at the bottom of the page, you're going to see this nifty little box that says, would you like a 60-month pay-as-you-go program? No interest if you have decent credit? Check that box, and you can walk on out of there with a brand-new bedroom set for about $25 a month at GhostBed.com/drinkingbros. Next up, we got HardAFSeltzer.com. 8% going straight to your fucking dome. We got about 30 days left with the original flavors. It's the blue raspberry, the peach, lemon lime, the old strawberry shortcake. You got about 30 days to get those before we swap some out. Get them if you don't have them. No carbs, no sugars, no gluten if you give a shit about that. But 8% are all the goddamn fun. We only ship by the case. So when the case shows up at your house, it's for the neighborhood to black out on. It's not just for you. We're shipping for the neighborhood, damn it. We ship to 41 states. Tennessee is off the board. If you live in Tennessee, we're everywhere. We're in Clarksville. We're in Chattanooga. We're in Memphis. We're in Knoxville. We're in Smyrna. We're in Murfreesboro. I don't know if I said Nashville. I've been drinking today. We're in every place you can imagine there. Cleveland, Tennessee. There's places that I don't even know. Paris. We're in Paris, Tennessee, for Christ's sakes. Go get some seltzers, regular price at the store. And if you're over the border in Kentucky or Arkansas and all that shit, just hop over the border. That's it. Treat it like Mexico treats the United States. Just hop on over the border. Just go into Tennessee and pick up a 12-pack from your favorite place. Damn it. Frugal McDougal's down there. Go there. Okay. Go to was it Liberty Liquors? I might even just be making up liquor stores at this point. I'm not even fucking sure. We're everywhere. God damn. We're in all the places down there. We're at Hot Springs, damn it. Go there. That big wine place down there. The huge stores. We're in all those places. Go to Tennessee and grab some 12 packs. Fly them off the shelves, damn it. It helps. It helps. You know what else helps? Is if you go to hardafseltzer.com and just have it shipped to your house. Every cent goes back in opening up a new state. A new state is opening in 3 weeks. So go to hardafseltzer.com. It also helps if you go to drinkinbros.com as well and get some merch from us. Merch store is stocked. Abolish the FBI. We were doing that before it was trendy. I've seen some other shirts pop up. Motherfucker, that was in our store for months, dude. Go there and get the Abolish the FBI, the CIA shirts. All of those are in there. We got all the fun things in there. We got the hoodies and the long sleeves for the fall. Because it will get chilly at some point, not here, but in the rest of the country where it's normal. We got the flex fit hats, snapbacks, you name it. We've got them in the store. Flags. Support the show. Go to drinkinbros.com. Click on the store and buy some merch from us. We would greatly appreciate it. Also, there's a submission for the Drinking Bro of the Week there. Just click that on. Just fill it out to whoever you want the Drinking Bro of the Week to, and it comes directly to our inbox, and we will read it live on air. I appreciate it, Michael.
Please go ahead.
So I'll tell you what the media is, in my opinion.
Yes.
I think it's the Washington Post. I think it's the New York Times. I think USA Today, not so much, but it's the respected media outlets. And then they've let in some of the ones from the internet, right? Like a Vice or a Vox or somebody like that, where I think the reporting is dog shit, but those headlines are shared. They're all over Facebook and everything else. They're all over Twitter. And those are the ones you see. And those are supposed to be the respected news sources, right? I think the Washington Post, the top of the page reads, in the dark, democracy dies or something like that, or democracy dies in the dark, whatever it is. And you read some of these articles and I don't think they're incorrect. They're clearly slanted one way or the other, depending
upon.
Everything
is, though.
100%.
Everything.
But that's traditional media. And I think with podcasts, the reason why they're so popular is because you know it's an opinion, right? Whereas with traditional media, that is not supposed to be opinionated, although it is, and it's got its own slant on it.
So I will disagree with you. I understand what you're saying, but today media... Mm-hmm. When people say media, what they're really trying to say is media is whatever I read or whatever I don't like. Like to if a Republican said, well, it's the media, they're talking about CNN, right? They don't watch it. So really media to people are people they disagree with.
I'll lump in CNN and Fox, though, in that same conversation. 100%.
They're polarizing.
Yes.
They're polarizing.
Yeah.
So what the real definition when uneducated people, and I don't care what color you are,
yeah,
if you're uneducated and you say media, you're just saying whatever you don't like, that's your media.
Traditional media,
but
is,
media
is what I
is
think
never
it is.
What you like.
I don't,
in an argument, if somebody goes, it's the media, you never, if you're a big CNN fan, when you say media, that means Fox. If you're a big Fox fan, when you say media, you're not going to say it's the media that's trying to change your mind. That's like you talking about your own station.
I think it's all encompassing, and I think CNN and Fox have to be lumped in there.
Oh, they are, 100%.
And I think, yeah, even ESPN, right, is still the media. It's sports media, but it's still the media.
But when people say the media, instead of saying the media, they should be saying, like for me, when you say the media, right, to me, I don't read the news. I don't listen. I mean, I read certain things and I try to find as much fact as possible, but I will not watch Fox or CNN or MSNBC.
So I'll watch all of it across the board because I want to see who took what story and whatever story it is, and then take each person's take from it and see whatever slant or spin they put on it.
I used to do that. But then it's basic. It's so basic watching those shows because you know, like if the Capitol people rate Fox is going to be like, these are patriots. The other side is going to be like, these are horrible people. You already know their spin. I could be like this water bottle, like, oh, liberals are, we need to save the planet. Other people, it doesn't give a shit. You know, green doesn't matter. So look, I can tell you each side before the story even comes out. So why do I need to watch that? I know their sides.
And for us, you can throw that on the floor because I think recycling's for poor people. Yeah, it's for poor people. But we don't do that in here.
But that's the thing is, like, you already know their takes. So I want to find things like, I want to find podcast or people that talk about politics where it's definite one Republican, one Democrat, and they really have real conversations about things. To me, that's my media. But when people say media, just remember they're saying they're addressing media they don't like, because people don't address the media they do like. They don't call media they like media. They call it whatever it is.
Right. But as far as like the right and left, I don't think there's many people that are willing to have that conversation. I think Bill Maher is kind of in there. Like, well, he'll have the right and left on. I think James Carville was really good at it back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you have that anymore. And I don't know if the networks will allow it anymore, because what sells is a hard stance, right or left. And that's it.
Let me tell you a funny story. I had a reporter. I knew a great reporter, and he's still on CNN. And when I first started,
Don Lemon.
When I first, no, because he's black, that's racist. I know white people too, Ross. It was interesting because this person made fun of me and go, ah, celebrity news, it's just gossip, blah 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 blah. And now to see the real news treat their news like basically an entertainment magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You could interview Donald Trump, Joe Biden for 2 hours, but they will take the only clip they'll play is the one where they talk shit about each other.
Yeah.
The other hour and 59 minutes, don't matter. Don't matter. They could have said the most incredible things for the country, but they will take the clip, just like podcasting.
Yeah.
We'll take the clip they think that's going to sell the podcast. And that's what it is. Media. I'm talking about news outlets. I'm talking about pocket. I'm talking about the world. It's all about clicks now. It's all about people viewing your thing. So you're going to post whatever clip, because I do it too,
mm-hmm.
that you think will get you views on your podcast.
Sure.
And they do the same thing. So it's all driven by money. It's all driven by clicks, and it's all driven by exposure. Because if you're doing a podcast and nobody knows you're doing a podcast, you're not fucking doing a podcast.
Well, you might as well be in your backyard.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So yeah. That's the whole thing is, you know, it just drives me crazy when people say media. And I just think when you say media, you need to be like, I would much rather a Republican or Democrat saying, you know what, Fox News is messing it up. Or you know what, CNN is messing it up.
I think they're all, though. I think it's all, they're all lumped in the same. Traditional media to me, and that's traditional because they're still on television.
But you can't generalize media, like all media.
Well,
when you say media, you're saying all media.
But is there any, because you've read.
Like, yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any news source that you personally trust?
No.
Me neither.
No.
So how do you not lump it in together? If you don't have one that you can go to, like, because it got to a point where I would read USA Today. It was very childlike.
Yep.
And it just had car crash in Iowa, 19 people dead or whatever it is. And you're like, all right, great. I got the news and there was no spin on it.
Here's the thing. You can really get the facts, though, about something without opinions. That's all over the place. You can actually get the honest facts.
But where is that?
Well, I tell you, on both sides, if they will address, like CNN, they will give you facts and then opinion-based. Fox, too, at times. Like, they won't talk about the cow. The problem with Fox is everybody knows both CNN and Fox, they're very heavy opinionated.
Mm-hmm.
But at times, they will give you the real facts and then just go off. Like, for instance, they will say 7 people did this, 8 people, or like Donald Trump, he's in trouble for A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And those are real cases. That is real. There's nothing false about that. He's being investigated for A, B, and C.
Right.
Those are facts. Now, Fox won't say those facts. They'll just give opinions that, oh, the country is against them. They're trying, which is a terrible story to sell. You know what I mean? Because you're not giving your audience the real things he's actually being investigated. Because he is being investigated for things.
Sure.
You know?
But same with CNN, where, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So they'll say, CNN will take those 5 things that he's actually being investigated on, or 3 things, whatever it is, then it's all opinion after that.
Correct. Yeah.
Fox, if it's something on the Republican side where it has, like NATO with Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
why are we paying all this money when nobody's coming up with us? You know, they'll give you those facts.
Sure.
And then it's all opinion-based, where CNN won't give you those facts, but it's all like, we're going against the world. You know what I mean? So there are facts. There are articles you can find with the true facts. So once it goes to opinion, I stop reading. But you can find facts, and that's the problem. And you know this. People read a headline.
Yeah.
And that's all they read. They don't know anything about the article.
I just read this yesterday because they had the ratings out as far as the shows across the board. I mean, the top five shows were all Fox.
Of course.
So I don't think, me personally, like, let's just take Fox, because CNN was way down the list.
Yeah,
it was an MSNBC show that was ahead of CNN.
Yeah.
Because Don Lemon's ratings were like 680,000 per show, which is not great.
No,
Anderson
not great.
Cooper was, I think, 1.1. And then Tucker and those guys were way ahead.
3 million. Yeah.
But when you're up at that level, and I'm sure it was probably like this at E2 back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to kill the cash cow. So whatever it is, it's like, hey, but it's working. Let's keep going.
But also, these people know they're selling false narratives, but they're making money off of it. If you're Tucker Carlson, you know your audience.
Yes.
You know, you know what to say to fire them up. So, and you're making, I'm guessing, he probably makes $10 million a year at least.
A minimum, yeah.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Why not keep doing it? Even if you know everything you're saying is bullshit, it don't matter. You're ruining the country. But to you, it's kind of like, I'm an actor in this play. Because Fox went to court about this whole voting machine thing, and it's documented. And these are facts you can't argue with. It's documented that their lawyers say, this is entertainment. We don't expect people to believe what we say.
Correct.
This is fact.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're right or left. These are facts that were said in court to protect Fox.
But both... All of those networks, CNN, Fox, everything, 100%. They're all entertainment at this
but
point.
My point is, they're all entertainment.
All of them.
But my point is that this is a fact you can't argue with that was said in court.
Sure.
That's its document. So those are facts you can find, right? That's what I'm saying. So you can find the facts. So people that treat Fox like real news, which in court they said it's not, then if I'm a Fox viewer, I got to be like, oh, I like what they're saying. I agree with what they're saying, but also I know it's entertainment. You know what I mean?
But at this stage of media and traditional media,
yes,
like CNN, Fox, all of it, is anybody really fooled anymore? Do you think they are, that it's not entertainment at a certain base?
Because
to me, it has all become
100%. You have people.
It's all become a podcast. It's
people believe it. You have people raid the Capitol. You know, because of Donald Trump's hype, because they believe in this man so much. They believe. So, yes, people believe it. 100% people believe it.
Would you have gone in that day?
Hell no. Hell no.
The selfies look great, though.
This is the thing. I would never believe somebody to a point where I wouldn't do my own investigation and be like, yo, is this a good idea? Because to me, that's common sense. Plus, I'm black and Asian.
Yeah,
There's no way
you're
black
going
people,
down either way.
Yeah. No. Like, it's a thing where, like, people really there's a group of certain people. I don't like to generalize. That's why I don't like to say media. There are a group of certain people that are ride or die with Donald Trump. Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them. There are certain people that are ride or die with Obama. Certain people that are ride or die with Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, the Bushes. You know what I mean? Good for y'all. But me?
Yeah.
I don't care what side of the fence you're on. I'm going to investigate before I really throw 100%.
No, and
I've been asked several times.
And that's smart, but I don't think most people do it.
But they have the capability to.
Everybody just doesn't want to. Nobody wants to.
That's what I'm saying. So that's when I say, when people are saying sheep, you're a sheep, you're this, you're that. I hear sheep thrown around so much, and that enrages me, because when those people are saying sheep, they're just spitting out the same thing they're hearing, which makes you a sheep too.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like we're all sheep, but you're saying you're a cooler sheep. I don't understand it, man. It's just the whole thing's ridiculous to me. It's just like, there's nobody you can trust. There's whether the news outlets are horrible, newspapers are horrible, everybody is opinion based, and that's fine. Just know that, though. Just know it's not real news. It's their opinions. And I have no problem with you watching Fox or CNN and going, I like their opinions. I agree with their opinions. But I know probably there's no facts behind their opinions.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? As long as you recognize that.
I do.
Well, of course, because you're educated. And like I said, it usually goes to the uneducated people that just want something to believe in. And let's be honest. Let's be honest. There's a big audience in America that feels like their country is being taken away. You know, it's a whether they agree with it, they feel like something's being taken away from them.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm leaning that way. The more and more things go where it's just like, I don't believe in raiding a president's house. I don't believe in impeachments. I don't think it was right for Clinton. I didn't think it was right for Trump. Like, it's all a fucking waste of time.
It's
all
a show. It's a show.
All of it. Like, even the Senate hearings for steroids. I remember those.
Rodriguez and was it?
It was.
That was before A-Rod.
Was it Barry Bonds?
Yeah, it was Barry Bonds.
Bonds, I think, didn't show up.
He didn't
have
to.
It was McGuire, Sosa,
Roger Clemens.
Yeah.
And then one went to jail. It was an Olympic female Olympian. Was it Marion Jones?
I think so.
Yeah, she went to jail for a full year for lying about doing steroids.
Dude,
all of that is a waste of time to me.
Was Palmero sworn in? Because he might have committed perjury. Because he was the dude that was up there that was like, I have not.
Yeah.
Taking steroids.
No, what happened
and then
was
he definitely got tested.
Well, no. So what happened was he got up and said, I've not taken steroids. And then he came back and played, and I believe they popped him on a steroid test. And it was right afterwards.
But, this is the anger that I have is we see these people, and I'm gonna call them white collar crimes, because anytime you have money, it's considered a white collar crime. We're seeing people not show up to court.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing people say, nah, fuck you, government, I'm not doing it. But a dude that smokes weed, if he has too much of it, is going to jail for 10 years.
Yeah.
These people are doing like when, you remember when there was a big argument when the government was handing out checks to people for not working?
Uh-huh.
And normal people, you, me, everybody, I heard conversations because I live in a very Republican area, right?
Where?
So I live in Las Vegas.
Oh, shit. Okay, cool.
So, but it's a 50-50 state, but the place I lived in was very Republican. Mm-hmm. So I would overhear stuff. I would be in conversations all the time because I like hearing both sides. And they were like, why don't people go to work? They're just getting free paychecks. And it's interesting in America, we always blame the smallest person. And you never look at, well, they should get those checks because the guys up here, y'all fucked it all up. Yeah, I'm going to get my minimum wage. So because y'all screwed everything up. Y'all didn't attack this. Y'all thought it wasn't serious. The president come out and said it was serious. Joe Biden got in there and fucked it up even more.
You talking about it for COVID?
Yes, I'm
okay,
talking about
gotcha,
COVID.
Gotcha, gotcha.
So this is why people were collecting those checks. And it's interesting how normal people, it's almost like we're in this game where the government's up here and they have us brainwashed where we're blaming the smallest denominator, a person that's making minimum wage that can't change nothing in America, mm-hmm. right? But these people were saying, you're right. Why are they getting free checks?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, because y'all fucked it up. They should get free money. If I could get free money and qualify, I would take it for as long as possible because they screwed it up. It's their problem. We vote them in to fix these problems.
Right.
It's still not fixed. Give me my money.
Mm-hmm.
But normal Americans will blame the guy making minimum wage, which blows me away.
Yes.
It blows me away.
For me, the issue I had with it was I got checks during it, and I didn't ask for the checks. We were doing fine. We had one of the rare companies that was, you know, during COVID, Hollywood had shut down, and so our advertisers called, and they were like, hey, can you guys put out more content? Because there is nothing out there.
Yeah.
We're like, can you go every day? And we're like, yeah, I mean, we can go every day. And we weren't doing anything anyways. And it felt like 28 days later, driving to the studio every day, where it was like, holy shit, it wasn't a car on the road. And it was just kind of us. Giorgio, you were there for that in North Carolina. And we kept going, but I didn't need the checks. And they just sent me the checks.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I didn't ask. I understand about giving it to the minimum wage workers and all that other stuff who couldn't work.
Now, the checks for the big companies that were getting out of trouble, that's where I had a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Because those could have went to the little person.
And they're all getting popped now.
But they are.
Yeah.
But I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about specifically Pizza Hut or whatever organization saying we can't get workers because they're getting free checks. It's like, okay. Because the government screwed it up. I just in America right now, it seems like we're all brainwashed and blaming the smallest person that can't do anything rather than the people that can. And that's a very bad situation to be in. Like, you're blaming the minimum wage worker that's why America's not moving forward?
Yeah.
No. Why don't you blame the people that screwed it up at the top? And that's all. Yeah, it's very fascinating to me because I'm a type of dude that loves where I live because I get to hear honest opinions all the time. On both sides.
Austin is like that. It is. Austin's
liberal and Republican at the same time.
They are,
it's 50-50. And, yeah. I love places like this because I moved from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. I pull up into my driveway of my Airbnb. Both sides, Trump signs. This is different.
Yeah.
I've lived in L.A. where it's all Biden signs or it's all whatever signs. So you first have this taste in your mouth like, ugh, right? Because you can paint Donald Trump as a racist, as this, as that. To me, he's an entertainer. I think he's a horrible person. But I know I've interviewed him several times. Mm-hmm. He's an entertainer.
Yeah.
He knows what to say to get people fired up. He knows how to sell TV shows. He knows how to sell property. He's good. He's a great salesman. Yeah. Right. So he's going to say whatever needs to be said to get the job done. I get it. I've interviewed him several times. I know him. So I pull in. I meet my neighbors. And let me tell you something. The nicest people in the world.
Yeah.
Like literally the nicest people. All they cared about was my family. I cared about their families, met their kids. Our kids played. And you learn that, dude, when you have the news and you have newspapers, they want everything to seem so extreme. When you pull into your driveway and your two next door neighbors are Trump people and you realize, yo, man, it's not really like that. That's what they want to, that's what the media, and when I say media, news and newspapers, they want you to believe it's like that because that creates more ratings. But when you live in the real world, it's not like that.
No.
You'll see it here and there.
Yeah.
But it's not. I've been in Austin for 3 days. There's no person that jumped in my face going, you're black and Asian, Trump all the way. You know, nobody's doing that.
No.
But they want you to believe that's how it is. And they will take one instance of an idiot doing that, blasted all over the TV and go, see, this is why Trump shouldn't be president.
Right.
But it's not really like that.
No,
because I live next to two of them and they were great. Just like a Republican living in LA. It's like LA can get aggressive about it. I'm not going to lie about that. But when it comes down to it, people just want to take care of their families and live a great life. And politics is politics. Once you strip that away, man, it all comes down to the family, the friends. And that's what I learned living in Las Vegas. And that's why I loved getting out of Los Angeles because you really grasp that. You get out of a place that's all left-leaning and you go into a place where you can hear conversations from every side, and that's beautiful. And that's where I generated all these ideas of, you know, like I don't do politics in my stand-up, but I'm at a point where I could now because I hear both sides every day. I get both sides. I love some Republican ideas. I love some Democratic ideas. I would love a president one day to be like, you know what? Screw your parties. I like this over here. I like that over there. And here we go. But that will never happen because too much money is involved in
it.
And that's what makes it real sad that you'll never have a guy going, you know what? I believe in these policies of the Republicans, these policies of the Democrats. Hey, I'm doing it. Oh, y'all don't like me? Well, screw y'all. We're still moving forward.
Well, because you need their fucking votes. So you need the Senate. Ooh. You need the House. You need
and
all
that's
that shit.
The problem.
It's not one guy making the decision.
Absolutely.
And to your point, I went to this dinner party maybe 4 or 5 months ago. It's called the Influencers Dinner. And they get people together. You're only allowed to say your name. You're not allowed to say what you do.
Yep.
A guy named John Levy, he wrote a bestseller. He organizes it. He's done about 2,000 of them. And every time there's about 14 people, all from way different backgrounds. And then you guys make a dinner together. So you make this dinner together, and all you know is their first names. You can ask them where they're from, and that's about it. And then at the end, you sit at the table, and you say what you do and everything
that's
else. And he said something unbelievably fascinating. I'll never forget it. He goes, if you break everybody down to politics or whatever it is, he goes, I guarantee you it's two issues. You're probably only two issues off from a Republican or a Democrat that you really, really care about. Just two issues. And after this dinner, like, he was completely right. Because you meet all these people,
well,
and then
what
you
are
realize,
the two issues? Now I'm on a... you're talking about two issues.
Two issues in your life.
Got you.
That you, you know, would separate you from being a Democrat and Republican that you really passionately believe in.
Got you. Whether it's the abortion, whether it's like when Donald Trump first
gun
voted
control,
in,
gun control, whatever it is, right?
Exactly. When Donald Trump was elected president, I had a lot of friends that were liberal mm-hmm. that said, oh, I'm going to give him a chance because I'm a small business, because they thought he really was going to help out small businesses. So I don't know if that worked or not, because I'm not a small business. So I would have to talk to, I would have to defer to them. But that's why they gave him a chance the first time.
Right.
So it was an issue they had that I was like, well, why would you do that? I didn't have a small business.
Yeah.
I worked for a big company.
And I'm for not you, paying. But yeah. for you personally, if you sat and thought about it, it's there's probably just two issues that you're really passionate
100%.
About that you wouldn't give up.
Yeah. My thing being black and Asian, married to a white woman and having panda kids, you know, kids yeah. like black, white,
panda,
and Asian,
panda.
My issue with like Trump was the dude, obviously, I don't think he's racist, but I don't like people saying racist things. And I don't want that to be my leader. Now, like I said, I've interviewed him several times. Mm-hmm. He's not racist.
No.
But he knows what to say to fire up his base, which is racist things, which I don't want my kids involved with. I don't want the world involved with. So that was one major issue I had with him. And then I just don't think he's that bright.
Right.
You know, with Biden, he's fucking old. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, he had this, hey, COVID's here. You know what's coming. You know, and you still can't make it happen. And I never thought he was going to be a good president. And I believe Biden's the first president that was voted because you didn't want the other person.
Right.
It wasn't who's better. It was like, I don't like him. I'm voting for Biden. Not like, I don't think a lot of people voted Biden because they love Biden. It was just like, it wasn't him. So I'm voting for Biden. And that was the first time I've ever voted like that as well. I just didn't like Donald Trump because I don't want my kids growing up in a world
where
they're hearing it and the president's acting like a child a lot of times, you know, and I didn't like that.
It turned a lot of people off. I think he did a great job policy wise. My co-host says this all the time, but he says, you know, if he just would have learned to shut the fuck up,
100%,
probably wouldn't gotten a second term. Things were going well in the country and everything else. And I agree with it. With Biden, here's another quote that he always says. He always says, tell me why you voted for Biden without saying the word Trump.
Yeah.
And nobody can, which is true as well.
But that's democracy.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
somebody you feel is horrible, you're going to vote the other way.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I like, no, everybody, I will tell you this. I believe 90% of people voted for Biden just because they didn't want Trump in. And I think it's going to have, if he does rerun, which I believe he will, it'll happen again.
I wonder. Because I think a lot of Republicans again. Are starting to get on the DeSantis train, and especially age at that point.
DeSantis can't win.
You don't think so?
100%. DeSantis will lose. If Trump lost by 7 million, DeSantis will lose by 10 million.
But who's the candidate? Who's the candidate in 2024?
See, this is one thing you don't know, is anytime, and I tell Republicans all the time, y'all shoot yourself in the foot all the time, and it's mainly about black people. Anytime you try to take anything from a black person, they will come out in force. Let me tell you how the Republicans could have won the last election. Oh, no, everybody vote. It's fine. Then black people be like, well, shit, everything's fair. It's all good. It might not show up. You know, because, hey, it's all. But when you tell, look, my father's black. Half of my family's black. You tell them they can't do something.
Yeah.
Shit, they're going to show up. They're going to show up in force. If I was a Republican, I'd be like, yo, let everybody vote. It's cool. I'm not taking actually, let's put more boxes in the urban neighborhoods. It's easier to vote.
It's funny you said that because I'm from Georgia originally.
Yeah.
And like, that's exactly what happened in the state of Georgia.
It is. Here's the thing. Every time I hear Republicans are pulling boxes from urban neighborhoods, I'm like, you just lost. Because now you're telling black people they can't do something. And black people, women, especially black women, the most persistent, the most hard push. I mean, look what we've been through. Been through slavery, pushed through that. Been through terrible times, pushed through that. Now you're saying you're going to take a voting mailbox away from it, and we're not going to be able to get over that when we just went through our lineage of slavery. Come on, man. We're about to put it in your face. And as soon as they start pulling boxes in Georgia and in Houston, I was like, yo, this is about to get ugly for Republicans, because you're telling black people they can't do something, which is like throwing dynamite on a fire. It's like, yo, they're about to fuck y'all up. And they did. And
my
they did.
Buddies called me in Atlanta and they were like, man, I've never seen lines like this before when they were voting. I was like, no shit. I was like, Atlanta, huh?
Because they were telling black people they couldn't do something.
And Georgia actually flipped blue for the first time in, fuck, man, I can't even. I grew up there my whole life, so yeah, I have no idea.
I would guess Carter
Yeah, Jimmy Carter, right? In 70, but I wasn't a lot. I wasn't alive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, he's also from Georgia.
He is.
Yeah.
He is.
And that's the whole thing. I said it too. I told several friends, I go, as soon as they start pulling these voting, that just, it kind of like on Republicans, if you try to pull guns, which no president has really done, but it's kind of like you talk about, oh, I'm going to take guns away. That unites them. The abortion thing unites Republicans.
Yeah.
What unites black people? For all you Republicans watching this, that trying to win your election, and I'm probably giving away the secret sauce, don't tell black people they can't do nothing.
Just let it go.
Let it play out, man. Just like, hey, if I was a Republican running in Austin, Texas, I was like, you know what I want to do? I want to put more voting boxes in the urban areas. I want everybody to vote. Black people, come on out and vote. You're welcomed. Here's all the boxes. Actually, it's going to be 3-1 in urban areas. Like, literally, I will put a voting box outside each of your house.
And then they're going to be like, no, I'm not going to do that.
And then they'll be like, oh, because, man, black people are so used to being oppressed, and now you're oppressing them by not voting. So they got to beat that oppression. And they 100%. Black people, that's one thing I know about my family and black people. We love challenges. And when you tell us we can't do something, look at all the players in the NBA, NFL that come from horrible areas.
Yeah.
They beat the odds. Now, a lot of them don't, but it's part of being the odds, being it's just built different, man. Mm. And I'm not saying white people, I don't want anybody to make this racist, but like, that's a skill, man. That's something you learn. Like my dad, you know, I learned it from my dad. I learned it from my grandfather. My grandfather was, you know, he was born in 1902, you know, like just think about that time, 1902.
Yeah.
Like literally hanging people at that time. His lineage went through that. My dad's went through, he had to, you know, go through segregation, still got a PhD in nuclear physics, had to march just to drink out of water fountains. That's my dad. Me? I would never drink out of a fountain. That's disgusting. Like, that's my lineage. Yeah. Like, I'm soft, man. I'm soft, you know? But I know from their past, if you tell them, you know, my black side of the family, you tell them they can't do something, they're going to do it.
That's funny.
And they're going to show you. So as soon as Republicans start pulling things, I know it's going to go awfully wrong for
them. So what you're saying for Republicans in the next election, just put more boxes in the neighborhoods. You're good.
No, you make everybody feel welcome. For some reason, Republicans have a problem making everyone feel welcome because their base doesn't want people to feel welcome, a lot of their base, right? We're us. You know, we don't want other people. You know, that's what I feel as a person that votes both ways. I voted for Bush, voted for Obama. I voted for, you know, I couldn't have voted for the first Bush. I was too young. But I voted for Bush after 9/11.
Okay.
I voted for Democrat. I go back and forth, right? And now sitting here, since everything is so segregated,
mm-hmm.
I feel like Republicans have their people. It's almost like high school. This is our clique, and this is who we're going to roll with. And we're going to lose a lot of people, but we feel our base is strong enough. The Democratic side, the Democrats, their problem is they want everybody. Mm-hmm. So there's no focus.
Right.
It's kind of like, we love everybody, and there's so much invite.
It's broken into two, because you have the progressives, and then you have the squad and like the AOCs, and well, then you have the traditional Democrats.
Well, you have the Tea Party at the Republicans now. When a party breaks up, here's the thing. If a Republican says, let's jump over this cliff, without discussion, everybody jumping off that cliff for whatever reason, right? Democrats, let's jump off this cliff. Well, let's really talk about this first. Why are we jumping off this cliff? So the party loves to discuss issues rather than make shit happen. To me, as an outsider, like I'm not a
Democrat-wise, right?
Democrat-wise. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Republicans, one thing good about them is they got each other's back. And they will go to the wall for each other, where Democrats aren't like that. Now, this is an outsider that votes both ways.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And some, you need both, you know, like you need to go to the wall on certain things.
Yeah.
Which the Democrats don't do, but Republicans don't talk it out either. Yeah. It's kind of like these two influential people in our party like this. Let's go, because we want them. We want their endorsement. Right.
Yeah.
Democrats aren't like that, really. You know, it's like I'm my own person. But that just shows you like how the country is, too. You know what I mean? Like so it's very interesting as an outsider watching politics. And that's what I take away from it. You have two totally different parties, and the group of people they're appealing to is completely different, because I don't believe both sides want everybody in it. Like, Democrats don't want Donald Trump's people to vote for. Like, they don't want those people in there. It's almost like a different way each side is segregating its audience away. There hasn't been a president in a while that I felt like everybody liked. And of course, when I say everybody's not going to like, but at least where you feel comfortable with them. Even Obama, I felt, was a great guy and people liked him. Mm-hmm. But when you have a person like Mitch on his first day in office go, we need to not make him a second term president, you know, automatically you're not going to work with him. Some people, and there is a small group of people that didn't like him because he was black. Let's mm-hmm. be honest. We live in America. That happens. And somebody tells me things are not racist, I go, you realize Jackie Robinson was the first black player in baseball 75 years ago. So if you're 85, you watch baseball with no ethnicity in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So you can't say things change in 75 years. There is racism. Yes, it's getting better. And I don't like when certain people go, well, things aren't getting better. Yes, they are. My dad.
They are. And as years keep going to the country, to your point.
Yeah.
Because once you get out of those generations.
Yes.
Who aren't sitting there talking about it at Christmas or Thanksgiving. Yep. When I was four, we were sitting at, you know, drinking out of different fountains and stuff like that. I think once that dies out, because people don't realize civil rights was in the 60s, right? So you're only looking at 60 years at this point. I think once this generation, our generation, dies out and then it starts from there, you know, the more and more you're distanced from the past.
I know, but that's a bad thing too. You know, a lot of people think I do, because you need to know where you're from.
But we're already erasing history with taking down statues, flags, all the other shit, right?
You're taking down history that's not American anymore to a lot of people. You know, like, that's what I feel they're doing. Like, I don't care about statues myself. I can give a fuck less if you have a statue.
I don't give a fuck about statues. Like, unless it's myself, obviously.
Yeah, of course. And you would put that in front of the building.
Oh, I bought my trophies back there that are behind you. So, yeah. It's after I won my kids' championships. Come
that's
on.
Awesome, man.
Coach of the year, yeah.
So. Coach of the year, yeah. But I feel that America, they love to overcorrect. Like, look, I understand. I always see things both sides. I understand one side, you want to tear it down because it's not good for America. You know, like, if you have some people that had slaves at the time, you know, like, okay, you could celebrate them if you want, but why do I need to have a monument about that?
Right.
You know, but some people are like, well, this is part of history and it needs to be seen. Right. I understand that too. To me, I could care less about a statue. You know, so I do think history is important to people of color, because you can't forget what happened. You can't blame that, because this is what I say, is any poor person, no matter what color, has a disadvantage in this country. They're not going to get the same schooling. They're not going to get the same benefits as people with money.
Right.
That's just common. And it wasn't their choice to be born into that. That's it. Just like there wasn't people's choices to be the countries that are fighting all the time. It wasn't the kid's choice to be born. It's just you are. So that is the real factual facts, that you're born in poverty. You're not going to have the same chances. Now, there is proven studies that show if you're black and born in those situations, your chance is even harder. You know, not an excuse, but this facts, it's numbers. I'm talking about things you can look up, you can read. Now, you can say, I don't believe it, but these are factual numbers that have been reported over and over and over.
No,
and again,
my co-host talks about it all the time. It's 100% true.
It's 100% true. But I also believe that while you move forward, you still need to look back, because it's a sense of pride too. I mean, it's kind of like if you started this podcast with 100 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now let's say you have 4 million people that watch it. You would want to go, man, remember when we started this with only 100 people? And look what it's become. So basically you're saying, get rid of the past. When we die out, it's just like, yeah, we have 4 million people. This is awesome. So now you have no sense.
I hate the journey, Michael.
Dude, I love the journey.
If I could skip the journey, that'd be great.
Man, the journey the journey is great,
the
man.
The stress and everything else? No, skip the journey. Give me the fast pass.
But then your life is boring, man. your life is fucking just.
It's not. For me personally, again, it depends on the person. This goes back to the fame thing too. Like, it depends on the person of what you view happiness is. And I've had a good sense of it since I was young, and I really don't know why. I've always known, me personally, that time is the most important thing
100%.
That we have. 100%. And I knew it since I was fucking 12 years old.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason. Therefore, to skip the line for all of this shit is to get to the good stuff. It's where you can enjoy yourself, spend more time with your family, spend more time with your kids, going to sporting events, concerts, whatever it is, community stuff.
But if you didn't go through, but if you didn't go through the bad times, you wouldn't enjoy the good times. If you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth and you had millions of dollars, you know, it's anything. It's anything, man. Just this podcast. If you always had millions of people watching out of the gate, you wouldn't appreciate more people listening to it. You know what I mean?
It's not that.
It's the journey.
But I think you're born with the work ethic, and that's this is what I find in Austin, and I bitch about this all the time. There is nobody really here with a work ethic at all. It's hard to find workers. I felt the same way about LA as well.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus Christ, man, I can't get a fucking plumber up in this bitch.
Yeah.
And I think you're born with a work ethic.
100%.
So there are people, in my opinion, who have been born with money where you're just like, all right, great. What are you going to do with it? Right? Like a Ted Turner, for example. Yeah. I'll just go back to my hometown in Atlanta. Ted Turner, his dad was in, it was billboard salesman. That's all he did.
Yeah.
Hey, you're going to run these billboards and that's going to be your life and everything else. And he's like, you know what? I don't want to do that. You know, I know we're rich and it's great, but I want to run a media company. I want to do.
And I respect those people.
Right.
Because they make more opportunity out of their money. But their journey of starting CNN or whatever Ted Turner started, was it CNN?
Yeah, well, TBS was first. TBS and then TNT and then TNT. CNN. And
okay,
then-
so, but. He had struggles at the beginning. It just didn't take off overnight. So that's his journey. And that's what I respect is like, you know, my friend has a joke. I can't tell you what comic. He goes, I don't respect. And he's a black comic before I even say this joke. But he goes, I give more props to rich white kids that make it pro than black kids. You know what I mean? Because they have everything and they're still working their ass off to make it. And this is a black comic saying this, so I don't want to get canceled. When a black person makes it out of hood, you're looking for a better life. The life the white kid already has that's rich. We're talking about wealthy, rich white kids that make it pro.
Sure, sure.
So black kids are in anybody poor is working hard to get to that level.
Do you know a white rich kid, though, that's made it pro? I don't.
Josh Rosen.
He's terrible. Rosen's terrible.
Joe Burrow grew up pretty comfortable.
Did
Matt Stafford. No, oh, Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford grew up in fucking Highland Park.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so right. See? Yeah. I mean, how great is that? You have everything, and you're like, you know what? I'm still going pro. But see, that just shows you his joke is actually factual, where I guarantee if you broke down a roster, there's no super wealthy pro players on any sport. Oh, there's a couple here and there.
Peyton Manning.
Was he super rich?
Well, his dad was an NFL Arch quarterback. Manning, yeah,
his dad was Arch Manning.
Literally, okay,
every single golfer.
Yeah, true.
Okay, that's the one sport. That's it. Golfing and probably tennis, you have to come from money.
Well, if you look at the great white players in the NBA, they're all European and they grew up in poverty, Ukraine, fighting their way.
Yeah. Jokic grew up worse off than any fucking black American basketball player in fucking Bosnia.
He had a bazooka in his hand at like age four. Yeah.
Fucking gorilla children. You know, like, like Lupe Fiasco had a song about like kids 5 years old fighting in wars and stuff like that. But that's the thing that was so, that I'll always remember that joke he said about 10 years ago too. It's like, I'm more impressed when a rich white person goes pro than a person that's poor.
Yeah.
Because the person that's poor just trying to get to where the rich kid already is.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean? This rich kid is like, yo, I'm still doing this.
I'm still good.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, I don't know.
This is a fun show today.
Yeah, man.
Now's the point in the show we get to the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
Well, of course, the number one answer always is my father, because he's such an inspiration to me and he's been through so much in this country and still came out on top. And, you know, I love him so much. And my mom too, you know, like if I could give out two, it'd be to them, but that's probably an answer you get a lot. They're just my world, man. They're just my world and they created who I am. And that means so much. Now, if you want to talk industry, my drinking bro would be The Rock. Because when I was coming up, I interviewed The Rock from Miami to now, mm-hmm. right? And I remember about 8-9 years ago, after an interview, because The Rock, you got to understand, when you do a junket, and that's where you interview celebrities, but there's like 100 outlets there to interview The Rock.
Yeah.
Back to back to back to back.
And it's usually the four, yeah, you go down the Four Seasons,
yep.
you sit in a
yep.
room, and then you just go in and out all day long for 8-12 hours.
So The Rock, in the middle of this junket, stops the junket, tells the publicist, hang on, and talks to me one-on-one. And we've always had a good rapport. He goes, what are you doing? I go, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm enjoying it. He said, are you enjoying it? I go, yeah, yeah. He goes, do you want more? I remember this. I go, yeah, you know, I want to do comedy. I was doing stand-up. I just started. I go, yeah, I'm trying to blow up and stand up. I want to do that, and I want to act. And he goes, all right. He gives me his acting coach's number.
Mm-hmm.
About 6 months later, I interview him again. He says, you didn't call my acting coach. I go, yeah, because I'm trying to get stand-up down. He goes, all right. And I could tell over the years, because this went on for like 5-6 more years, and he would stop me every interview and go, what are you doing now? And now to look back on it and go, the biggest superstar in the world at one time had more belief in me than I did in myself. I look back on that, and that motivates me every single day. This dude was literally.
Why didn't you do it?
Huh?
Why didn't you do it?
I don't know. I just felt like the money was so great in what I was doing. I was liking it more then, because uh-huh. this was like 8 years. So I was like still hyped about it.
Sure.
But I could always tell. And without him saying, yo, you're more than this, he was just always throwing. It's like, oh, so how's comedy going? Oh, when are you going to start acting? And when?
He was disappointed.
He never said it, but I just felt that now that I look back on it, he's like, yo, why are you interviewing me? You should be out there doing your own stuff. You know, now that I look back on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that meant a lot. Now I look back on it all the time and go, oh, man, this dude knew I could be something. So now I got a new show on Apple called Amber Brown that I act in, got the comedy special out, and now I'm making my own way. And, you know, I don't know if I'll ever see him again because I don't interview celebrities anymore. But, man, I got to tell you, that moment and all those moments he stopped me after his interview and asked me those questions, man, it drives me every single day to be great. And that little thing he probably forgot about by now meant so much to me. And that was the big moment in my career that I look back all the time and go, yo, the biggest movie star in the world was like, basically, why are you interviewing me? Why are you still here?
Yeah.
You need to go on and do your own thing, you know? And he those words never came out of his mouth. But now that I look back on it, it seems like that's what he was trying to say.
I have a similar story, oddly enough. Mm-hmm. It was Kevin Hart for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin Hart, way back in the day. We used to audition for shit and do like chemistry reads.
You used
to
go out for the black roles all the time?
No.
Short black
he would roles? Go out for the friend role.
Oh, dope.
He would be the token black guy. And literally.
Really?
I'm not kidding.
No, 100%.
The very first time we did a chemistry test was for Not Another Teen Movie. And it was the role was the token black guy. So he was dead serious. Dion Richmond ended up getting it. And I did a few
That's
movies.
That's what they put on the script, the token black guy?
If you look at the credits now.
It's a satirical movie.
It's a satirical movie.
It's the whole point.
Oh, okay. I was
it's
like,
a spoof.
I haven't seen
it's like
it.
Scary
I was
movie.
Like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I was like, God damn.
No. It's like, yeah, it's satirizing all like real teen movies where there's one token
black
friend.
It's like Scary Movie.
Yeah.
I was like, God damn, that's gangster, man. Even for back then, that's fucking gangster. And I love it.
But that was the first time I met him. Neither of us got it. It was down to, I think, me and Chris Evans, and I think him and Dion Richmond, and neither of us got it. Couple more reads like that, and then I saw him in this other movie, and they were like, hey, the casting director came out and said, hey, we're running long. We apologize. It's going to be an hour and a half before we get to you guys. And I was just like, oh, fuck. So I ended up talking to him for like an hour and a half, and it's just him and I. And we were kind of laughing about the shit that we hadn't gotten together, and we both thought we were the funniest at that time. And it was just like, yo, what the fuck? And his show didn't go at NBC, and I was like, I just read about it. And I was like, how do you feel? Are you pissed off about it? And he goes, no, man, fuck this. I'm going to keep writing. I'm going to keep doing this and blah, 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 blah. And he goes, that's what you should do. Because you just write your own shit. You got to make your own thing and blah, 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 blah. And like after an hour of this, and he's not, he didn't get famous probably for another 12 years after that. Like, I mean, he's not famous at all.
Yeah.
And there's this one dude with this much energy saying, you got to do this and this and this. And I was like, yeah, fuck them. Fuck all these people and everything else. I went home that night and I started writing. And it totally changed my life.
And those are moments that the journey that you want to skip.
Ugh.
No, nope. That's part of your journey. That's amazing. You had a conversation 12 years before Kevin Hart blew up, and it gave you a piece of advice you still remember today, and you probably think about it a couple times a month.
Well, here's the funniest thing about it. So to go back to your point where you're like, I wonder if The Rock remembers.
Yeah.
I wonder if he remembers or probably not or whatever. I heard, so Seth Rogen was on Jimmy Fallon, and he was telling the story. He's like, yeah, man, I met Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart was like, man, you got to write. You got to create.
That's what I was like. He was just saying the same shit to every white guy. He was like, you need to write. You need to do this. You need to write. That was his line to every white guy.
And we were supposed to have him on the show a couple, because we cover the Super Bowl and all that stuff on the sports show. We were supposed to have him on the show, but we ran long with Terrell Davis.
Yeah.
And it was just like, dude, I wasn't stopping that guy.
Yeah. No, he's great. He's great.
Terrell Davis was great and wasn't stopping him. So we missed him. And he's coming back in town, I think, in a month or so. And we're trying to get him back on, Kevin. But I've never gotten to tell him that. I hope for you, you run into The Rock and you're like, yo, dude, look, I'm doing all the things and it's awesome.
It'd be amazing, man. And so I can't wait for that moment. And now I was so excited that I have an acting credit and things on the acting side are starting to take off. So, man, it's a beautiful situation, man. It really is a beautiful situation. I'm blessed right now. Everything's going great.
That's great. That's great. Tell everybody where they can find you.
At Michael Yo on everything. That's Y-O. And please, please, please subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'm
excited. Is it Michael Yo on YouTube?
Yeah, it's okay. Michael Yo Comedy.
Okay, great.
On YouTube. And like I said, this is bet on myself. And this is basically how I can support my family and myself through my YouTube channel. Check out the videos. Check out the special. And it would mean the world, man. It really would.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Check out Michael Yo. Thanks for stopping by
Thank
today.
You.
This was fun. And best of luck at your gigs this week.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Thank you.
From Michael Yo, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.